Welcome back to The Source on KSTX 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the United States, federal assistance programs go through the states to be managed and administered, but those dollars that are supposed to go to impoverished families, abused and neglected children, to the disabled and the elderly poor, those dollars don't always get to where they're supposed to go. Instead, they are diverted to the state's administrations and to help shore up the general fund, and also to private contractors who are motivated by profit and have little or no oversight. It's a story that's told in the new book, The Poverty Industry, and the Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. We're joined by the author, Daniel L. Hatcher, professor of law at the University of Baltimore. And Daniel, welcome to The Source.
Hello, David. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
And we invite our listeners into the conversation. We want to hear what you have to say about the poverty industry and what you've seen yourself. Give us a call, 210-614-8980. You can email questions and comments to the source at tpr.org. So, Daniel, what do you mean by the poverty industry?
Well, you know, I guess to start, most of us, when we think of an industry, we think of a grouping of companies that provide a similar product or services. You might think of the coal mining industry. I use the poverty industry both because of a similarity to what used to be called the military-industrial complex, where you had large defense contractors partnering with government, and you had more of a focus on profit rather than ensuring the best services for the common defense. You're seeing the same thing with the poverty industry, or you could also call it the poverty-industrial complex, where you have state government, either at the state level or state agencies contracting with these private revenue contractors. And again, the focus is more on maximizing revenue and profit rather than providing the best services to those in need. I think it's also a stark symbolic comparison. If you think of mining rock for coal ore, what's literally happening in this poverty industry is you have children and the poor being mined for revenue, rather than, again, serving their best interests.
So you write in the book that Texas is a state where many of its politicians, like former Governor Rick Perry, routinely express their disdain for federal aid. But Governor Perry sought to maximize the state's claims for federal Medicaid funds. From 2008 to 2013, Perry used such illusory schemes to divert more than $1.7 billion in federal Medicaid matching funds to his general coffers. Texas contributes no money, instead forces state hospitals to provide the state's contributions, and then takes the federal contribution for the general fund. And the result of this practice that is supposed to help the poor, instead it's hurting the poor. It discourages state hospitals from treating the poorest Texans. Tell us more about that.
Right. So, this practice is occurring in both traditionally red states and blue states around the country because states are cash-strapped. Both Democratic and Republican states have been unwilling to raise sufficient revenue through general taxation, so they're looking for money wherever they can get it. There is definitely some irony when you have a governor like Rick Perry who has been pretty strong in his statements against federal aid for the poor, but then he himself was using not just a means to maximize federal aid, but illusory means, you know, budget shell games to move money around, to claim the federal aid with no state spending, when it's supposed to be a shared spending arrangement between the states and the federal government. And then not only was he claiming this federal aid through an illusory means, but then he was en routing it from its intended purpose to general state coffers. And that results in real harm, where you have aid funds that are intended to help vulnerable Texans are instead routed to the general state coffers for other purposes.
Can someone like Rick Perry defend that practice by saying, by putting money in the state coffers, that they're able to basically help the general welfare of the state?
Well, once the money goes into the general fund, you know, it could be used for anything the state wants to use it for. It could certainly use that to help vulnerable populations, to provide health care services for those in need, but it could also use the funds to build highways or build a new ballpark. Who knows? You know, wherever the money would, wherever he would want to use the funds. Whereas the structure of the aid program is specifically intended to provide not just Medicaid services, but Medicaid services for the targeted population. So this is often used, this scheme is often used using nursing homes, for example, and nursing homes around the country are unfortunately not doing well in the quality of care that they provide to their low-income elderly residents. But then states will use nursing homes to leverage additional federal aid intended for improved services at those nursing facilities, but then the funds are routed to other state purposes.
But this is also impacting foster care programs, and you're right that the potential for using foster children to claim federal funds for administrative costs is so high that some states are essentially trying to be as inefficient as possible in order to claim more administrative dollars. For example, a Texas financial report complained about how the state should be doing a better job of increasing administrative cost because this would help provide more money for the state's bottom line and go to the So the states have an incentive to do a bad job to claim more administrative dollars?
Right. I think that's really striking in Texas, and this is coming directly from the Texas Comptroller's Office, who was advising the state that, you know, look, you're actually being too efficient in this process of operating what's called the Title IV-E program, which is the federal funding source for foster care services. And the administrative costs, I believe, at the time were around 20%. And the comptroller's office was saying, look, you know, other states are much more inefficient. They have higher administrative costs. They're getting more federal aid to pay for those administrative services. Again, you know, who knows then what the state might actually use the federal aid for. So the comptroller suggested, you know, we should try to actually become even so inefficient that the administrative cost might even be greater than the cost of providing the actual services. And then the comptroller's office went on to say, I can help you. We, the comptroller's office, can help Texas do that, can help the foster care agencies do this, but we'll take 20% of the additional federal aid that results from the increasing inefficiency.
Are they actually looking to become more inefficient or to create the appearance of being more inefficient so that would be able to, they would even claim more dollars?
Well, both. I mean, there are some fiscal shenanigans that happen where you can claim administrative costs when they might not actually exist, but it is also directly seeking to become more inefficient as a way to claim more federal aid. And the comptroller's office, you know, looking for its own money, is almost acting like one of these private revenue contractors to do this for a contingency fee, saying, we can help you do this, and we'll take a 20% cut.
And how does that impact the kids themselves who were supposed to be getting this foster care?
Well, the impact is huge, both because it siphons so much of this money away from intended purposes to get direct services to the foster care children, and it makes the overall cost larger and larger, but not in a way that's providing needed care to the children, right? So as the cost balloons, there's simultaneously increasing pressure to rein those costs in, all the while the children are receiving inadequate care in foster care. And then not only is Texas doing this, but Texas, like other states, is actually taking resources directly from kids in foster care. They'll look for children who are potentially disabled to try to increase the number of children determined disabled who are in foster care, or seek out children who have dead
right.
parents, and then apply for survivor or disability benefits.
Okay.
Money that belongs to the children,
okay.
and they'll take that money from the kids to pay back to as a state revenue source.
Okay, we can take a quick break. We're talking about the poverty industry, the exploitation of America's most vulnerable citizens. This is The Source on KSTX. Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. States like Texas have figured out how to take the federal dollars meant for impoverished families, abused and neglected children, the disabled and the elderly poor, and strip mine those dollars and services for revenue for the state's general fund. There is a massive siphoning off of the social safety net in order to line the pockets of private contractors who are very close to the administrators in Texas. And soon this could get a lot worse. We're talking about the poverty industry, the exploitation of America's most vulnerable citizens. We're speaking with the author Daniel L. Hatcher. The number to call in for you to join our conversation is 210-614-8980. And Renee is on the line. Hi, Renee. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I belong to a board for a nonprofit organization that works with children that have been recovered, were abused, et cetera, and the state has taken them to a nonprofit that works very hard to house them, feed them, and care for them, love them, et cetera. And it's quite a few, also adults. And yet, as we get more children, our revenue from the state has dropped by 30%. It's scandalous. It's incredible. People have to ask themselves in the state of Texas, are you voting for children to be placed at more risk in our state? And that's what's going on, especially for those that are invisible, those that we don't see that are being housed and cared for because they are blind, they're autistic, because, you know, they may have multiple conditions. And I think it's something that needs to change. And I press our people to vote differently. And that's what we need to do.
All right, Renee, thank you for the call. Appreciate your call. So, Daniel Hatcher, you're right that there may be other, you know, private contractors who get involved and take over some of these services. We're seeing that in the Texas Foster Care Program and other programs. But in the end of the day, it's up to the elected officials. They're the buck's supposed to stop there.
Right. You know, there's certainly been concern on all sorts of contracts around the country where private companies have entered the realm of providing services for the vulnerable. And you even have, you know, I mentioned the military-industrial complex before, and even some of those same very companies have seen the money to be made. Companies like Lockheed Martin and Northrop Grumman, right, are providing child support services. But at the end of the day, it's the state leaders who are entering these contracts that determine the scope of the contract, determine the structure of the contract, and determine how, if there are these revenue contracts, how the funds are to be used. If Texas is using a contract to help increase federal aid through various claiming mechanisms, the state could decide we'll engage in this process, we'll do it real, and we'll also actually use those funds as intended to help vulnerable populations. The prior caller made a good point that the human service agencies around the country are significantly underfunded, and we've reached a point where foster care agencies are so cash-strapped they're literally looking to their own abused and neglected beneficiaries as a source to take those children's funds. And then it's even worse because the foster care agencies are taking the money from children, but the agencies themselves aren't even receiving any additional fiscal capacity from that process. Rather, the states then are then reducing state funding to those agencies based upon how much the agencies are taking from the kids.
But here in Texas, we're seeing that we have a broken foster care system. We have a judge demanding that we fix this program. We get it back on its feet. Nothing seems to be happening. And judging from what you're writing and what you're telling us, it seems like the part of the story is that the money's not going where it's supposed to be. That's part of the problem.
Right. I think that's absolutely right. And it's incredibly difficult to follow the money often because, you know, state by state, the structure is often different. Some states are completely state-run programs. Others are county by county. The state budget processes differ state by state. Some are more transparent than others. So it's incredibly difficult to try to get into the minutiae and understand where this money is going. I think often the state comptrollers themselves don't ultimately know where the money is going. It just sort of goes into a black hole. So there definitely needs to be an improvement in monitoring of funds that are intended to provide specific services to make sure it's done well.
Okay, let's go with another caller. Amy is on the line. Amy, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I needed to report that it is very true what this gentleman is stating, that I have worked in group homes where they're telling us that we need to report certain verbiage and regarding the children just so they could get funding. And to me, that's very detrimental to a child to report something of a child that's not so, just so they could pay staff. And where is the protection for LCCAs like us that report it to licensing, that these group homes are trying to report things on children that stating that they have disabilities that they don't, just to get funding? And there is just no protection for us when we report it to licensing. We see this, we report it, we get terminated, wrongfully terminated. And when we seek help, you know, because we're trying to run these group homes properly, these individuals that are opening up these group homes, taking these children based on intellectual disabilities only, and it's just, it's upsetting because I've seen it. It's happened to us. There's several of us, and right. there's no voices for us.
What kind of verbiage?
I'm the voice for the children. I'm trying to voice and advocate for these children.
Are you looking for? Are they asking you to report?
They're asking us to report that these children are actually worse, persistent misbehaviors, that they're, like, if they're suicidal ideations, self-inflicting, things like that. And I'm like, we're not going to do that. If a child has an outburst, that's one day. The next day, it could be something totally different.
Okay, Amy.
We cannot. Yeah.
Amy, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to get Daniel back in the conversation. And Daniel, you write about Texas using psychotropic drugs on foster care children quite a bit. And that seems to be there's a fiscal strategy to overdoping these kids.
Right. And there's a connection to what the comment just made by the prior caller, where not only is there this very concerning incentive to try to increase the level of children determined disabled to try to make them look as bad as possible, and again, not to actually provide them with increased funds and services to help serve those disabling needs, but so the state then could take those funds as a source of revenue. And not only that, you know, the state doesn't even provide through that process additional revenue to the direct care providers, such as this caller described. Also layered on top of that, you have the increased drugging of children in foster care and in group home and in juvenile detention centers. And that's both done because it can allow the facilities to reduce costs. If they sedate the children, often using psychotropic medications for off-label usage, then they can reduce staffing costs. And then it does also create an incentive. I've seen reports from contractors that will discuss, look, if these children look as bad as possible, we'll provide all these, all this evidence together and when we provide the application to the Social Security Administration to seek disability benefits. And if they are on medications, that's a part of the process in terms of them looking worse so they can claim more funds. And again, if the meds are necessary, they should definitely be used, right? But the concern is this fiscal incentive where states are encouraging practices that can do harm to the children.
You quote a CASA volunteer who recalled seeing a 3-year-old foster child who was drooling on the couch because he had been prescribed behavioral altering anti-anxiety drugs as soon as he went into foster care. But you also write that we have no way of knowing, there's no national data to determine how much Medicaid funding is being diverted by the poverty industry for other purposes. And that seems amazing that these are federal dollars targeted for a specific use, then they end up in the state's hands, and we don't know exactly if it's getting to the intended purpose.
Right, and there are definitely examples where states are doing a very good job in some programs of getting the aid and providing much-needed services. The focus of this book is looking at those circumstances where states are misusing the aid funds, and because of the structure called fiscal federalism, where you have the funding structure shared by the federal government and the states, and the money moving from the federal government to the states, and then the state structure and the lack of transparency in the budget process, it's often virtually impossible to know for sure where that money is going. So I have some very stark examples, and state by state, I present some numbers, like Texas, you know, Rick Perry over a 5-year period is diverting over $1.7 billion. And Medicaid funds to general coffers. That was just using one revenue strategy, right? There are many others that the states use, including Texas.
Right,
so
but you also
talking in the billions.
But you say this could get worse because Speaker Paul Ryan supports terminating SNAP, food stamps, housing vouchers, child care, other programs that assist. This is assistance given directly to individuals, but he wants to divert it to states in block in flexible block funds, which would probably end up going exactly where the Medicaid and the foster dollars are going.
Right, and so there are proposals like what you mentioned that Ryan has proposed before, and Trump proposes on his website to block grant the Medicaid program. the book that I wrote, all the research and facts that are provided in the book really provides sound, strong evidence that that's a horrific idea. If you have a governor who is under a complex regulatory framework where the federal government is trying its best to monitor activities, and you have a governor who's still using fiscal shenanigans, a shell game to move money around and then divert those funds under an illusory process, what's that governor going to do while his or her state is cash-strapped, right? If they're just given a blank check from a block grant says, here, use this federal aid as however you would like, right? But hopefully you can help the poor. So it would definitely result in an increase waste and misuse of aid funds intended to help the vulnerable populations.
The name of the book is The Poverty Industry, The Exploitation of America's Most Vulnerable Citizens. The author is Daniel L. Hatcher. Daniel, it was great talking with you.
Great talking with you. Thank you for having me on the show.
And thanks for tuning us in. This is The Source on KSTX.